Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's always soccer in Philadelphia on a Monday night, and whew, hang on a second, I need to catch my breath after a super mega soccer Sunday bonanza. I watched four games yesterday. How many games did I watch? I watched three games yesterday. My name's Kevin Kincaid. Joining me is somebody who always brings the ratings when he joins the program. Everybody, please give a roaring round of applause. It's Russ Joy.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Russ, did you watch one game yesterday? Did you watch two games yesterday? Did you watch three or maybe four soccer games in one day?
I watched seven games yesterday.
No.
I did.
What did you watch?
I was watching some J-League. I watched the Iranian League. And
No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. No. I was getting ready for this.
I love the Iranian League, though.
Who doesn't? I'll tell you.
What's the Tehran derby? Isn't it like Esteghlal? How do you say it? I'm gonna Google the Tehran derby here real quick.
You're a mess.
We're gonna talk about that on the podcast.
I would say, you know, I caught parts of a bunch of games. Of course, the Gold Cup and the Women's World Cup final, your team, your town, your Philadelphia Union. Mm-hmm. And I tried to illegally stream the Brazil and Peru match. But I got to be honest.
You don't have ESPN Plus?
No.
You don't have ESPN Plus. Yeah,
I don't.
Wow.
And, you know, I could have gone with the $5. I had my wife convince her a little bit that we should get the ESPN Plus, like the year for like $80 or whatever. That also came with the UFC. Mm-hmm. The UFC matches on, was that Saturday? And came close to pulling the trigger on it, but like having to actually pay like another $60 or whatever every pay-per-view after that, that's tough.
Well, you get the fight nights. ESPN Plus is just great for like all soccer in general. You can get like literally anything on there. I mean, I think you get like Serie A, you get like all the other MLS games, you get the Iranian League on there. You might get the Iranian League. So the Tehran Derby is Esteghlal. So I don't know how to say it. Esteghlal versus Persepolis.
Oh, okay.
The most wins in the series, Esteghlal has 26 wins, and Ali Parvin has scored 20 goals in the Tehran Derby.
Good for him.
To lead all scorers in the Tehran Derby. Maybe sometime in the future, if Americans are actually allowed to go over there, maybe we'll do a live podcast from Tehran. We can get the Ayatollah to be a special guest if he's interested.
If nothing else, we can, with the WWE in town, maybe we can get the Ayatollah of rock and roller, Chris Jericho. No, I'm just kidding. He's with AEW now anyway. It doesn't matter.
Listen, speaking of live podcasts, I have an announcement to make. The live podcast at the Larimer on the 20th, 12 days from now, is still on. We're still good. Because somebody asked me, I just wanted to say that. It's still good. It's still on. Because the Larimer, Matt over there, they were originally supposed to open this past weekend, but they had to push the opening date back. But we're still good for the 20th. So nothing on our end. I'm happy to announce that Matt DeGeorge and Joe Tanzi will be joining me for the live podcast, which will be 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Russ, I asked you to do it. You're unavailable.
I'm at a wedding. I'm at our friend Ben's wedding. And I think it's really selfish of him to get married on the same day as the It's Always Soccer in Philadelphia.
It's a shame because you would have brought big ratings to the live podcast.
I bring the biggest ratings. I don't know what to tell you.
You do. The other announcement I had to make is, the Brian Sciarretta interview that I did for Crossing Broad last week, that was supposed to be a podcast, and I actually had audio issues for the first time in Always Soccer Philadelphia history. I'm really embarrassed and ashamed by it, but I took the audio from that and I turned it into a turned it into a good story for Crossing Broad. I think more people actually read it on Crossing Broad than actually would have listened to the podcast anyway, so go figure. So yeah, that was that. And then we ended up doing the impromptu podcast instead at the Gold Cup because I just wanted to get something up on the thing, you know?
So. Yep.
Thank you to like the 700 people who just listened to me and Tansy and Dave talking into my recorder for 20 minutes. That was interesting.
I enjoyed it.
But we had some fun. Yeah. Did you have fun? Was it a fun episode for you?
I thought it was a fun one. Yeah. I thought it was nice to listen to Zeitlin just approach the union with a little bit of disdain. I think he secretly hates them for finally being good now that he's gone.
I think we all kind of secretly hate them for that, you know? Yeah. I mean, I'm in the same boat. I do the podcast, though, so at least I can be Posadelphia and get more ratings.
Here's a question. Of the people who were on the show that you did, how many of them are going to be playing in the media game next week?
Oh, that's right. You know, I did not ask. Russ pressured me into playing in the media game again this year, so I did. So Russ and I will be representing Crossing Broad. At the media game. I don't think they've done it since they did it the first time in like 2016. There are pictures of Jim like yelling a command at me, and there's another one of me and Ernie talking. Anzio Williams, who is the news director at NBC10, he tore his ACL at the last media day. so we're going to try to avoid that. We don't want that to happen again.
My wife keeps saying to me, don't hurt yourself because we have the wedding that Saturday.
Yeah,
she's like,
yeah.
You can't get hurt. I'm like, oh,
wow. Yeah.
Now listen, KK, here's the thing. If we team up, we will wreck everyone. If I'm against you, I will blow you up. I'm just letting you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested to see what side we're on. And if we're on opposite sides, I'm gonna just go 2 feet, man.
Wait, did you pick your color?
Like a foot off the ground. Yeah, I just wrote down like it doesn't matter.
Oh,
are we supposed
no.
to pick one or two, or
yeah,
it doesn't matter?
What was blue or white?
Oh,
I picked
okay.
blue. You know.
Well, listen, these things are not that serious, so we can just swap.
Keep an eye.
Swap jerseys.
Oh, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, Union Media Game. It's that was fun. The last one I did, I put in a crunching slide tackle on somebody. I can't remember who it was. All right. Well, let's get on to the important things here. It's not the media game. It's the actual game. Philadelphia Union 3 points in Orlando, and then they only got one at home after a goofy weather delay. My take is like you go into a home and home, you're happy with 4 points, right? You think you get like draw on the road and you get three at home. But it was reversed. They got the three on the road and then they got the one at home. So you tell me, Russ, glass half full, glass half empty. Was that, did you feel good about how they got the 4 points?
No, I think that the win on the road felt fine. It felt like it should have. I'm more upset with how they performed on Sunday. Now I get the fact that, you know, you didn't have Jamiro, and that's going to throw you for a loop. But I guess the biggest issue that I had with it was, you know, maybe for both teams, I think like there were some excuses going around that because the game was delayed a day, that might have caused a problem for your team, your town, your Philadelphia Union, but it happened to both teams. Right. And for Orlando, it's another night away from home.
I think what hurt him is that they didn't get to play in front of a good crowd.
Yeah, I mean,
you know what I mean? That would have helped if there was the, you know, the 15, 16, 17,000 people who were supposed to be there on Saturday night, if they had all been there.
It looked like they were playing in front of an NWSL crowd. And, I'm the guy. Yeah, I'm the bad guy. I'm the bad guy. You know what? I can't wait to see all of the Twitter Justice Warriors who
Hard
are saying,
turn,
you know,
man.
Who are, look, I support the women's game. I do, I promise. But, like, all these people who have filled up Twitter for like the last weekend with you know, equal pay and equal rights and equal treatment of the game, I'm like look, I think it's great that everybody's going on Twitter and is supporting the game, but I guarantee you you're not going to see that much of an attendance boost. I think it's a shame. I'm gonna be honest,
you get your ass kicked saying something like that.
I know. Look, I guess it's just because I'm not afraid to say it. I think that people should support the women's game. Am I gonna go out to games? No, I barely go out to Union games. I have kids. It's hard. But like that honestly is my biggest takeaway from this weekend is I can't wait to see the tens of thousands of people who come out to NWSL games and continue to actually put their money where their mouth is. I don't see it.
All right. Well,
anyway,
hold
sorry.
Hold that thought, because we'll get to the women.
So yeah, the union got to, the men got to find out what it's like to play in front of a crowd that goes out to support the women. You didn't like it, men, did you? No. So you should turn around and you should go support the women's national team. That's what I'm saying.
No, that's a very roundabout way of getting of saving face there on that point. Just, you said it. You said it, bro, not me. Listen, so Andrew Vooten, well, and they don't have Ilsenio, by the way, too, so there's no Ilsenio, no Montero. I mean, I'm of the belief that if they have one or both of those guys, the Union win that game.
I don't think you should need them, though.
You shouldn't, but I mean, I don't think there's enough talent disparity.
Like, you can't, that's like an old Union thing, right? Like, you lose one guy and you can't figure out how to recover from it. This team has been so resilient all season, and for them to drop... Really, I effectively say you dropped, you know, obviously the 2 points. You should have come out with three. You end up with one on a late Kasper Schabelko goal, which was fantastic.
It was their two best players, though.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't, Kasper, I know what you're saying. Kasper the friendly striker is looking pretty darn good these days, man. I don't know.
So here's a question. Andrew Vooten is eligible to play next week at RSL, right? Make his debut, right?
Yep.
Tomorrow is when the paperwork goes through or whatever the fuck, right? So, I originally said, okay, let's see Sergio Santos and Andrew Vooten together. Sergio Santos has really disappointed me. He's really let me down. He's really embarrassed me again and made me feel ashamed. This is the third time I've felt ashamed on this podcast. Because I said that I thought he was the best of the crop, and I saw like some good things in him early in the season, and now he just has squandered every chance he's been given over the last three or four games, right? So I'm out on Sergio Santos outright. I'm out on
Google me.
So I let's just put him in the bagster for a little bit, right? Let's just put him off to the side. You got Fafa Pico, you got Schabelko, you got Vooten. Now the problem is that, like, I think Andrew Vooten, I think Kasper Schabelko play the same exact game, right? So then it gets into the philosophy that Adam Kahn and I were talking about on an earlier episode, like a couple months ago. We're saying, can you play like two center forward target men kind of guys on the field at the same time? I think it's kind of redundant, but I mean, the Union strikers are just, if you're playing in front of Fabian, Montero, Bedoya, Madunian, I mean, you're going to get great service no matter what. I now think that, like, maybe you could try Vooten and Schabelko up top. I mean, it's just hard for me to justify, because number one, I can't justify taking Schabelko off the field right now, right? Number two, I can't justify not having Vooten on the field. So, I mean, I'm of the mindset of you try those two guys, play those two guys and see if it works.
I agree. I'm trying to come up with a reasonable way to get both of those guys on the field and not have your quality drop. I've been in the same camp as you about Sergio Santos being, if not the best striker, the best option, the most versatile forward on the team. And I'm not going to allow this last stretch of 5-6 games dictate or change my feelings on him. I still think that he is a dynamic striker, and he gives him a complete package that nobody, except for maybe Vooten, who I haven't watched play, maybe he can give you some of it. But Santos, to me, is the complete package. They just haven't been able to get him in position to be successful. But I'm not giving up on him. This isn't like when I went to the well way too many times expecting Fernando Aristeguieta to turn it around. I still think that there is a salvageable player in Sergio Santos. I just don't know why we haven't seen it yet.
I don't get it, because, and I know that they've been like sticking him out on the right and at times, which doesn't really help, but like either he's like trying way too hard and he's just going a mile a minute and he's out of control, or he just looks very passive at times. Like where is the middle ground? Why can he not find the middle ground? You know,
I think, and Schabelko, I do think it's pressing. Like, I think that has to be part of it, right? Because
yeah,
Schabelko's been able to convert at a high clip at a high rate. And Fafa, who I've been critical of, and I'll continue to be, like, I think that it's nice to see that Fafa's been able to put the biscuit in the old onion bag. But, like, I think it's great, but I wouldn't bank on it, right?
Oh, Fafer.
Oh, Fafer, there he is. Oh, a lovely goal. I don't know. I would not stake my season success on Fafa being a consistent threat up top.
Well, you can't
I like the
two-man
game
change,
that he and Schabelko play.
Yeah, you can't change, like, your view. Like, if you felt that your strike force was not good enough that you had to go out and get Andrew Vooten, you can't just go back and change your mind now and say, oh, well, Pico and Schabelko are playing well. Because then, what, you're just going to stick Vooten on the bench? You can't do that. You got to say, we've seen enough of these two guys to know that that ain't it.
Yeah.
Like, they're good, serviceable, but we don't think that's it. So... And like Shabilko, look, Shabilko scored in four straight games. One of them, I think he scored from like 1 foot out. The two volleys were really nice, man. He hit those flush, caught them perfectly. Great goals. I mean, beyond that, though, I don't know if Shabilko is really any different to me than like a Corey Burke or a CJ Sapong. Like, I don't, we always talked about those guys. Can they be like bona fide, like number one, like studs on a team? Like, is one of those guys ever going to score 15 goals, 14 or 15 goals? CJ did it like once. I don't know if Shabilko is any different than that, or if he just benefits from playing in front of the best Union midfield that's ever been assembled.
I don't think it matters, right? Like, as long as he's able to convert his opportunities at a high enough clip, it doesn't matter how he's getting them.
Yeah.
Like that,
yeah.
That would be my argument. Now I want to do an exercise because we like to do exercises on It's Always Soccer in Philadelphia.
That's right.
Let's build a 4-4-2.
I love a good exercise.
Let's build a 4-4-2. And try to do it in a way that you can have Vooten and Shabilko up top, but also get Fafa on the field as an outside mid. And I have a proposal that's going to make most people's heads implode. But I know it's something that's been brought up to you before.
Let's hear it, yeah.
I'm not so sure that I wouldn't put Ali back at right back. Because I think if you're able to put somebody into place that is defensively responsible enough, but is also gifted enough offensively from that position, I'm not sure that it's not the worst thing in the world. Like, we've talked how many times about the fact that, boy, does this team look different if Keegan Rosenberry's ability to get into the final third could rear its head. I think this team has proven on the back line, at least, that they're fundamentally sound enough that if Ali were to make some runs, to make a beautiful overlap, to get into space on the right flank, that he's responsible enough to get back. Harris, I think, has actually played decently enough defensively in the last few games that he doesn't look like the vortex or the turnstile that he typically is as a defensive mid. Mm-hmm. I would explore the possibility, and I know that Jim probably won't, but Ale is right back. Get Fafa in as probably a left mid and allow this team to kind of run like an overloaded dynamic off the right side, where Ale is able to get up in the attack, but we know that he's capable of covering enough ground to get back. I'm not saying that it's got to be every play has to start out of the back and he needs to be the guy who's crossing in. But I think, you know, for better or worse, this team might benefit from having the speed of Fafa on the wing, having probably your two best striking options right now, your hottest guy in Casper, and probably your most overall talented in Vooten up top. And God, you get to put Jamiro in there, right? Like, it's a fun exercise. Build the 4-4-2. Go.
It is an exercise, and so I'll humor the exercise for the sake of the exercise, as I like to say. Okay, so Kai Wagner, Andre Blake, Kai Wagner. Not a great week for Andre Blake, by the way. Andre Blake, Kai Wagner, Austin Trusty, Jack Elliott.
Ali Bedoya. Right back.
Ali Bedoya. Okay. So I'm building yours.
Build mine.
Okay.
Yep.
Fafa Pico on the right, I guess. Jamiro on the left. Madunian in at playing the tip, right? Or at the pivot, right?
Yep.
Fabian, I guess. And then Shabilko and Vooten.
Tell me that's not potentially the best 11 that this team can field.
I just don't know if Fafa playing like tucked in, you know, because part of the thing with that too is he can't play wide when he's on the side of the diamond. Like part of the thing is like those guys have to stay in close enough to Madunian to protect him. Like he's not, it's kind of a narrow shape, you know, like Fafa's a winger, you know, so it's just not a, like, even when you play him up top, like he said earlier this year, like, I'm a winger, like I'm not used to playing like this. You know, and they're literally just not playing with wingers at all. And Fafa did a lot of good when they played 4-2-3-1 last year. He did a lot of good defensive work for Jim, coming back and defending and picking up guys and stuff like that. I don't have any concern about his desire to defend. I don't know how good of a defender he is. Like, I don't know if he's gonna like come in like Bedoya and put like a crunching tackle down. But the thing with like Bedoya playing right back, I don't know. He just does so many good little things in the midfield. Like, it's just hard for me to play him exclusively as a defender, because I understand how Jim likes to pull his fullbacks back so that they sit there and they just kind of bracket Madunian in, because Madunian will go kind of move further and further up and kind of like ping the ball around from like 25 yards out, and he'll just kind of be point guard up there, you know? So that's why you have Wagner and Gattis peeled back. But the way he can do it, sure. I just think he does a lot of good stuff in the position he's currently in. Like, it's hard for me to break up that midfield trio of Montero and Madunian and Bedoya, because it's like the best midfield ever assembled for this club. And like, that's their strength is just that like stranglehold, that Ted Nugent stranglehold in the midfield, you know? Mm-hmm. But what do you, let me finish the exercise with the question. What did you think of Fabian, his performance yesterday? Cause I thought the headed goal was nice, but I didn't see a lot else from him in the midfield. I thought he was dropping way too deep.
Can I be honest? Sure. I know that there have been injury spells. I know that there's been time away from the team. He looked rusty. Can you point to a performance this season that has been utterly impressive with Marco Fabian wearing the Union kit?
No.
And that's a concern to me. And I get that he's rusty. I totally understand it. The chemistry is not there with his teammates because he hasn't been on the pitch. I get it. I'm fearful that we're not looking at David Akam 2.0, but I'm a little bit fearful that for the money spent, he just might not fit that well.
Why, now, my hope, why is it? Like, I can't, I agree 100%. I just can't put my finger on it. Like, it looks like he's just playing a different game as everybody else out there.
I don't know. I haven't been able, like, I think I might, you and I, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go to the Crossing Broad office. We're going to go to the Jam board, and we're going to do a film breakdown. I don't know. It feels fundamentally like Fabian has been dropped into, like, he's been dropped from, like, playing in the EPL to Serie A, or, like, vice versa.
He's not in the same wavelength. Like, they're not, like, connecting, like, mentally. Like, when I look at Madunian, Bedoya, Montero, like, there's an understanding there. Yeah. There's kind of like a, it's not telekinesis. Telekinesis is when you move things with your mind, right?
Yeah.
What's the other?
Mental synergy is what we'll call it.
Telepathy, right? Yes, is that how you communicate mind to mind? Yeah, it's just like they kind of like, those guys know where they want to be and they know where their spots are, right?
But I think
Let's do a basketball analogy. Basketball, right? Like, Robert Covington and Dario Saric kind of knew where to be, right? And like, they understood their roles within the offense. Covington's not going to be a focal point. He's just going to get a wide open three. Dario's going to stand in the corner and have a corner three, or else he's going to crash the boards, right? Then Jimmy Butler comes in. He wants to play pick and roll. Now, it'll work. The Sixers, Jimmy Butler is Marco Fabian, okay? Like, it'll work, and you can go deep with that team, but it's just not, like, it's not ever going to click the way that it should. Is that a good analogy?
Yeah, I think it is.
Like, it just seems like he wants to play a different way. I don't know what the different
Yeah,
the
I'm
different
trying to think of a way to articulate it. I genuinely think, though, that so much of it is just that those guys have been able to build chemistry and have been able to build upon their telepathy, the word of the day.
You just think it's an experience and timing thing.
I mean, this isn't, again, the difference between being on the training ground and being on the game day pitch, it's totally different, right?
Now, how much
the battle? It's just fundamentally different.
It is. Now, here's the other thing I was thinking that because Fabian kept dropping deep, that pushed Aronson up, and we know Aronson is not yet ready to play that high, right? Yeah. If Montero was up there and he got displaced, he would be great playing up there. How many games have Fabian and Montero even played together? Because Montero wasn't there at the beginning of the year, and Fabian started like the first. Well, he started one, and then he started two, and he got red carded.
Yeah.
And then he missed two. So, like, I don't think Fabian and Montero specifically have played a lot together at all. And even going back, if you want to say, well, Fabian was here a little bit for preseason, you know, so he knows Madunian and Bedoya's games a little bit more. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm with you. I'm not saying it's, like, not – it can't ever work. But right now, it's just not there. Luckily, they still have the fortune of being able to work him in and get him – involved, right? So
yeah, and it's not like it's a role that he hasn't played before, you know what I mean? So it's I guess that it's maybe like the little bit of a cog in the wheel that you're that's not even a good analogy. It's not exactly like your Butler analogy, where you know it's a difference of putting a pick and roll guy in a DHO offense, but like Fabian's played this role before. At some point, you just have to think that these guys getting time together is going to build it. I want to ask you this, though. Mm-hmm. The role that Jamiro plays on this team, I feel like more often than not, I'm disappointed in the lack of touches that he gets by design. I feel like a lot of times Jamiro is the guy, he's like the kid that played on your high school team who was by far the most fit, the most in shape, who would just burn you from side to side, from touchline to touchline. And you would just kind of like, it's not that he was like positionally unaware, but he always got to the ball and you never felt the need to feed it to him because you knew he was going to get his touches through his own hard work. And I sometimes just wonder, like, why this team doesn't make it more of a point to get Jamiro the ball. I understand that, like, when Elsino comes in, he's super sub, he's your cheat code, and I get it. He gets to play effectively iso ball on the right flank. I get it. It's lovely. But Jamiro, to me, is as technically gifted, if not more. The way that he's able to weave his way in and out of traffic with the swagger that he does, I just wonder why they don't seem to be as
you don't
willing
think he's,
to,
you don't as, think he's getting enough touches.
I think they could lean on him more in a design role.
Or they could just make him more of the focal point. Yeah. I honestly think, well, you know, with Jim playing him, like, you know, last week they put him in the first Orlando game, he played at the tip and they pulled Aronson back. So maybe, to your point, that was an effort to try to get him the ball in different positions or get him higher up because they know he's got that creative ability. They've played him as a number 10 in the 4-2-3-1. So I think you're onto something there for sure. I think he's a guy who naturally just finds the ball, like comes back and demands the ball and always wants to be on it anyway.
And like I'm saying, he'll will his way to the ball.
Listen, no, Russ. I mean, it's a good point. It brings up a good kind of mini exercise here. Between Aronson, Fabian, and Montero, if you're playing 4-4-2 diamond and you're saying which three of those guys is the best at the tip to play the tip, Montero might be the best out of those three, and he might also be the best to play on either side of it. That's why I was like gushing over him earlier, because I was just like, Montero can play any position in the midfield. He can probably play Aronson's position better than he can. I know he can. He'd probably play Fabian's position better than he can.
Yep.
So I think obviously what you have to do is clone Jamiro Montero and just name him something different and say it's his twin brother.
I totally agree.
All right, well, moving on then from the Union, unless you had a final thought on the Union.
No, I think that's it.
So let's
I am encouraged, though. I know that you ask everybody on the press box episode if they're upset.
Yeah, if it was glass half empty or glass half full. I mean, I think it's still glass half full. It's glass half expectations are changed, you know?
I'm excited to see what Vooten looks like, because I think that's going to end up being, like, what, a sub in maybe the 70th minute, 65th minute? Can't imagine they're going to start him.
Right? You think they go, like, Shabilko and Pico, and then they give him, like, 25 minutes at the end of the game in the Rocky Mountain altitude? Rio Tinto.
Here's a fun idea.
It is on the road.
They won't do it because you're not gonna sub out both strikers. But you start with Fafa and Casper, the friendly striker,
mm-hmm.
and you pull Fafa and you put in Sergio.
Fafa.
No, sorry. Yeah, take out Fafa and you put in Wooten, the Wooten clan, right? The Wooten clan, and then you've got Casper and you got Wooten up top, ready to put all the biscuits in the basket, the onions in the back of the bag.
That's right.
And then you take out Casper with, like, I don't know, 10 minutes left, and you put Sergio up there. I genuinely want to see some mixing matching from Jim. Like, I want to see Sergio and Wooten. I want to see Wooten and Casper. Fafa's there.
Well, it's right. Like, if you believe in Santos and you still think he's got something, you can't just, like, shove him in there on the wing with, like, 20 minutes left. I know he's gotten some starts. I know he's had opportunities, but... I mean, at this point, like, we know what Fafa Pico is. It's not to say he's a bad player, because he's not, but, like, you know, he's inconsistent in front of the goal. You know, he'll do some good stuff. He'll do some bad stuff for you. So, okay, let's move it on then. Let's talk about the women then. Actually, I want to segue into that with a kind of thing that just made me laugh. I don't know if you saw this, but Grant Wall, you know, basically what happens is, like, I appreciate everybody trying to speak for the women's game and try and get people to pay attention and, you know, doing their due diligence and trying to help things along here. But sometimes you just get things that are too fake edgy and like people trying to be like a little too edgy and a little too woke. And it kind of like doesn't make any sense or just kind of backfires on them a little bit. Mm-hmm. So Grant Wall came out and said, honestly, I don't care a bit about the men's Gold Cup or the men's Copa America or the men's Africa Cup of Nations. The Women's World Cup is everything, and all those men's tournaments can jump in a lake.
That was the tweet?
Yeah. And then Stu Holden and, like, other people
you
were...
You virtue-signaling son of a biscuit.
It's just, like I get it. Like, it's important. Everybody should be paying attention. I think it's dumb because, like, I'm just sitting here thinking, like, you know, like, I'm willing to bet, like, 95% of people who like listen to this podcast, for example, watch the women's game and then watch like the Union at 4, watch the women at 11, the Union at 4, and then probably watch the men at 9. Yeah. And my takeaway was just like, you know, because they were bitching, the complaint stems from the idea. It's like, well, how can you play the women's final on the same day as the men's Gold Cup final and the Africa Cup of Nations and blah, blah, blah. Like, I get it. Like, it's saying, like, if we want to grow the women's game, like, give them this exclusivity and give them the spotlight for a day. Like, I get it. But, like, I'm sitting here thinking, like, well, shit, I get to watch, like, soccer all day. This is great. Yeah. You know, I get to watch, like, 3 great games. I mean, like, imagine applying that to, like, another, like, sport saying, like, well, I can't. The Miami Dolphins should have this day. And, you know, we can't have the Eagles playing at 8 o'clock, you know.
To like, quote Andy Reid, this is the this is the Women's World Cup day. Okay, this is their day.
We look forward to
remember the Stacey Andrews press conference. They're like, hey, can you talk to us? Wasn't that Brian Dawkins? They were like, can you talk about the decision to let Brian? No. This is Stacey's day. We'll get to that another day.
So Grant came back then and he said, I thought about this some more, and my friend Stu Holden made a good point. My tweet wasn't inclusive at all.
Oh, jeez.
I've always tried to be about inclusion, whether you call the sport soccer, football, calcio, whatever, and this was needlessly divisive. It's not like the fans and players, women's or men's, have any control over when these tournaments are scheduled, and there are great stories everywhere. It's a fantastic week to enjoy the sport. My apologies.
Shut up, Grant. Just shut up. Just stop. Just stop. Just stop.
Just it stop. Just makes me laugh because it's like I get what you're trying to do. You're trying to do a good thing, but then you go too far to the woke, too far to the clever and edgy side, and you just end up like biting yourself in the ass because it just sounds stupid. Like, I mean, I think most people probably approach the day where they're like, wow, we get to watch all these great games, you know. And the women, and here's the other thing, Russ, too, like, eventually, like, if the women's game is going to take the next step too, it's ultimately going to have to be able to stand against other things that are going on, right?
Yep.
So it's going to have to go against other sports that are being played at the same time. It's going to have to go against MLS or Gold Cup or whatever games that are going on at the same time. And then you can craft a narrative that says, well, the women's game got 20 bazillion viewers and the men's game only got blah, blah, blah viewers that were played on the same day. So I don't know. Yep. I don't know how much that works, but like they could almost, the edgy woke crew could help themselves by saying, oh, well, look, this is an opportunity for us to go head to head, not head to head, but like play something on the same day, kind of turn the narrative this way a little bit. So
yeah,
I
thought the women's game was like at almost a perfect time, you know.
It kicks
off the day the right way. Now, sure, they don't have much of a lead in, right? Like, I guess if you were gonna,
well, and it was 8 a.m. Pacific too, which hurt.
If everything were in the same time zone, then fine. Like, I get it. Maybe you would want to put them as, like, the rubber match between, like, the Copa and the Gold Cup. Like, okay, mm-hmm. then maybe, like, fine. Maybe that would be nifty. But dealing with the time zone differences that you had to, I mean, what would you have rathered if you're Grant Wall? Would you have preferred for the Women's World Cup to go off at the same time that, mm-hmm. you know, there's another major tournament going on? Or like that, there are like ML. Like I don't know exactly what that was going to happen.
You know, I just
like,
think I it was
the men played super late. I get that.
Who he's trying to reach, because all the people who follow him are probably going to watch both games anyway, or they're like already agree with his hot take anyway. So I don't really know like what the purpose of that was. But anyway, look, the U.S. women, they talked a big game. They did their celebrations. Rapinoe said whatever the hell she wanted to say. and they fucking went out and backed it up, man. And I loved every minute of it. I mean, to me, it like, dude, the irony to me was like everybody saying like, oh, it's un-American and blah, 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 and Rapinoe and Trump and all this fucking horse shit that I got to read every single day. But to me, that was the most American thing they could have done was they talked a big game. They backed it up on the field 100%. They went to Europe with a ton of pressure on their shoulders. They beat five straight European teams. If you start with Sweden in the group stage, they beat five straight European teams in Europe to lift the World Cup. And like, to me, they can say and do whatever the fuck they want to do because that's America. That's Philly. That's what we want in our athletes is just, you're going to say the shit, back it up on the field. And they did it a bazillion percent, man. And to me, that was the most impressive thing about it was they knew that the pressure was on their shoulders. They knew that they were putting more pressure on their shoulders that, you know, in addition to what was already on there when they do the tea celebration or when Rapinoe does her like, you know, Mary Poppins celebration with throwing her hand out, whatever the hell you want to call it. So I don't have any problem with anything they said or did. I mean, they played a comprehensive, I don't even think they particularly played that well in the final, if we're being honest. Like, I thought they probably could have been better. But, like, how can you not be impressed with just the macro level, like, way of how they handled themselves and under the circumstances?
They ended up becoming a beautifully beloved team. And once again, the nation rallied around them. And it's really important to point out that the thing that, you know, Megan Rapinoe hates Donald Trump for, which is being brash and braggadocious, is ultimately what the women's national team became. I'm John Boric. Check out my Facebook post.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. What a premise for an article, man.
That was really
a premise for an article. I was intrigued, man. I read it. And for people who don't know what we're talking about.
I think we need to hook up John Boric and Grant Wall. Not today. Well, whatever they're into, but like,
God. So if people don't know what we're talking about, John Boric, who's a raging right-wing conservative, not that there's anything wrong with that, because I really don't give a shit one way or another, but he's like an anti-Kaepernick guy. He's a pro-Trump guy. John Boric used to cover the Flyers for NBC Sports Philadelphia. He wrote a column, but he wrote it on his Facebook page because he's not with NBC anymore. Comparing the women's national team to Donald Trump. And he basically said they were like braggadocious and they talked a big game and they were like unapologetic in how they stomped Thailand and they didn't really have any feelings for anybody else. It was kind of honestly, I got what he was trying to say, but then the comeback is like, you know, like the anti-Trump people would say, well, he's a lying slime ball scumbag who got a $1 million loan from his dad and blah, 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 blah. And say, like, how could you ever dare compare them to blah, blah, blah?
Wow, you seem really, really well versed in that thought process there, Mr. Moderate.
I don't want to get like too deep into that part of it, but, Honestly, I get it. He was like talking about like American exceptionalism, right? Like this idea that we're the greatest country in the world. The Republicans love to say that we're the greatest country in the world, blah, blah. Which is fine because we can believe that. It's great to love the country you live in, of course, but it doesn't mean that like other countries aren't great too. Like we're the only fucking good country that's out there. That's so stupid. But yeah, that was an interesting take from him. I honestly think here's a take. I'll give you a take. I honestly think Megan Rapinoe didn't play that well.
It's not a hot take because it's right.
Well, I mean, from the run of play,
you can argue she wasn't even a top three player.
I know, exactly. I mean, you could say,
take that, Grant Wall.
I mean, I guess Alex Morgan out of Rose Lavelle. Julie Ertz, of course, is great as always. Becky Sauerbrunn. But Rapinoe, I mean, what? She scored three penalties, zero of which I think she earned. I know there's something to be said for being able to step up and take those and put them away, which she did, but still, I mean, like, we've had MLS Golden Boot winners who have scored like seven penalties, you know, so I just don't, you always got to put an asterisk on that, but, I honestly don't even really, I mean, I don't think they even played at their best in the final or in some of those other games, but, yeah, just showed how good they are, really. So I just wish we could get past the fucking, like, I understand, like, the importance of it and blah, 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 but, like, like, fuck, can we at least get like through just a 90-minute game before we go back into the political shit and all the... I don't have a problem with the fair pay shit. I think it's very important. I just think it's a very nuanced issue and people don't know what they're talking about. You know, because you have the collective bargaining agreement, the legal, you know, crap that's going back and forth between the two sides, the lack of understanding that the men get paid differently at the club level and the women get paid differently at the club level too. The lack of understanding that of the jurisdiction of what FIFA controls versus what the United States Soccer Federation controls. Right. So just a lot of that to me,
Kevin,
goes
people,
in one ear and out the other. Cause people don't know what the fuck they're talking about. So
listen, the Grant Wall Twitterverse doesn't care about facts. They care about outrage. Let them be outraged. I have a, by the way, I have the new theme song. I hope that from now on, the women's national team mm-hmm. takes this one on. You ready? They say I'm cocky, and I say what? It ain't bragging if you do it and you back it up. They say I'm cocky, and I say what? It ain't bragging if you do it and you back it up.
Is that WWF or WWE?
That's where I first heard it.
No.
Who's the artist?
It's,
I believe that he is a Trump supporter.
Sebastian Bach?
No, what? Johann?
Skid Row? Is that Skid Row?
No, stop. No, no. That, of course, is the great Kid Rock.
Okay, okay. Song, well, Sebastian Bach is like white trash and Kid Rock is white trash. So I was kind of like along the same things. Mm. Listen, Russ, they should, the women should get paid more than the men by United States Soccer, because the men make like 10 times as much at the club level anyway. So what the fuck does it really matter?
Also, the men suck.
And the men suck. Like Michael Bradley makes $5 million at the club level. So surely like you can justify like Rose Lavelle making $300,000 with U.S. Soccer and Michael Bradley's like taking $50,000.
Here's the thing.
You know, I'm never going to sit there and ask anybody to like give up money that they deserve. But like, really, I mean, do people understand how lopsided it is like to begin with? You know,
here's the thing. In high school athletics, in middle school athletics, I believe up to collegiate athletics, there's Title IX, right? And Title IX says that regardless of gender, well, I mean, this is part of it, but like regardless of gender, you are to provide men and women mm-hmm. or young men and young women with equal playing in terms of the field conditions, in terms of equipment that they're provided with. They're supposed to get the same sort of resources.
The same number of programs, I believe, as well.
Yep.
Right.
And so, as long as it's something that's applicable, yes. And, you know, I think that that would maybe be the fair case to bring. Like, if that's what we expect for the youth in our country who go into athletics, then I think it's more than fair to say that that should at least be what we see from the U.S. Soccer Federation.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's always, we go through this every 4 years, and it's like, you know, are people good? They're going to come back, they're going to go on the victory tour, I guess. Are people going to show up for NWSL games? I mean, it's at the end of the day, like, you can pump as much money as you want into it, but it's on people to show up. It's on people to tune in. I mean, obviously, you know, we haven't had a women's team here since 2011 when the Independents folded. Or I guess when the whole league folded, right? The WPS back then. That was before NWSL. But, like, look, at the end of the day, like, we live in a free market capitalist country. And, you know, you put more money into it. You can give it a financial push. You can have ESPN behind it. But at some point, it might not be this year, next year, the year after, but at some point, these, you know, everything has to be able to stand on its own to justify its place in the market, you know? So we can continue to help women's soccer along, you know, at some point you got to take the wheels off of it and say, look, you're going to have to stand on your own against an MLS game that's going on at the same time. Or you're going to have to stand alone against Major League Baseball that's going on at the same time. These are not, like, Russ, these are not issues that are, like, exclusive to the women's game. Like, we have this problem with the men's game, too, where the Philadelphia Union are going to have to be able to draw against the Sixers. They're going to have to be able to draw against the Phillies, they're going to have to be able to draw against the Eagles and the Flyers, you know, and they're going to have to fight for this piece of the marketplace, this piece of the pie, just like everybody else does, because it's just not feasible moving forward to like say, well, this is the women's time and this is when they're going to be on TV and we got to do that. Like, eventually you're going to get thrown into the fray
just like everybody else is, and you got to like surface, you know, you got to get your head above water, and you got to say that you can hold, you know, you can hold your own. And I'm not saying that that's, they can do that with the resources that they have now. You give them what they need and then say, okay, go do it. But that's the end game here is that you eventually kind of have to stand on your own two feet. And people like Joe friggin' 4-for-4 jabroni Philly sports fan, you got to get, you got to convince him. You know, it's no issue with me. It's no issue with you. It's no issue with Tannenwald and the George and Philadelphia Union fans or whatever who will watch the women's game, support the women's game. But you need to convince. It's just like Union fans. Union fans have to penetrate the 4-for-4 jabroni guy to get him to care about the Union. Women's soccer has to do the same thing. And that way, I don't even really see it as like a men's versus women's thing. It's more of like a soccer problem, isn't it?
Yep. Well, I think there's a whole element to this of like, I think you probably saw this, but like Twitter was then saying that means that every MLS club should then have a linked NWSL team, which I think is a terrible idea.
Yeah, right.
And there's a simple reason for it. We've seen what something like that looks like between like the partnership between the NBA and the WNBA.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Where they brought. You know, the idea was that the NBA was going to be able to get a better overall deal on stadium access for WNBA teams, and I guess use their negotiating leverage as an organization to help the WNBA. But what's the biggest problem? If you've ever turned on a WNBA game or have gone to one in person, it's, what, an arena that seats around 20,000 people, give or take, mm-hmm. maybe a few more at, like, MSG,
yeah.
Staples. But you go to a WNBA game and it's like, what, 4,000 people are there? And then it feels like you're playing to an empty arena where you could make the case that, you know, leagues like the WNBA or maybe the NWSL would benefit more from filling out like a college stadium. Or, you know, I know people don't want to say like a high school stadium, but some high school stadiums are actually nicer than some college stadiums. Try to build a core of supporters and loyal followers of the team by doing it in a way that builds an atmosphere and doesn't feel hollow and empty.
Well, and
I think that's been a big issue.
I agree. Cause they don't deserve to play in front of a 25% full stadium, you know? And but the other thing that makes it a lose-lose situation is that, you know, if you're linking, you know, every MLS team to like an NWSL team that, you know, by nature of the structure would be, you know, subsidized to some point by the MLS team, the money that they bring in or money above from US soccer. It's still, you're never going to be able to create that separation. It says that they have enough clout. They have enough, there's enough want for that product that it can stand on its own. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. The haters of women's soccer are always going to say, well, the Portland Thorns can't exist on their own without the Portland Timbers or something, right? Maybe that's a bad example because they very well supported in general. But you know what I mean? Like you could say Philadelphia Union and the Philadelphia Independents, bring them back. But could the Philadelphia, and that might work because the greater Union community would also support the intrinsically linked Independence community. But if you took away the Union and said to the Independents, okay, you go stand on your own, like there's just not enough demand for that in the marketplace that it's gonna, you know. That's why I always ask people to look at it pragmatically. It's not like being callous about it. It's like you got to understand of like the cutthroat like TV ratings business world that we live in. Like that's capitalism. Like if you can't justify, if you can't stand alone justify your place in the market, then it's just not there, you know. So, okay. Anyway, about the men, I watched the whole damn game last night, and that was the best I felt about the United States men's team in a long time. I mean, even though the result was disappointing and Josie missed a fucking sitter and Mexico, Guardado choked, Weston McKennie literally right in front of the referee. But I mean, they looked inspired in the first half. They were moving well. I don't know, man.
I had like a small case of PTSD. From watching that choke and nothing being done about it. Back in high school, when I was representing the Pottsville Crimson Tide, off the bench, of course, there was a moment.
Is that what you guys were called, the Crimson Tide?
The Crimson Tide, the Crimson which everybody Tide? I tell to, yeah, the Crimson Tide, like Alabama. And every time I say to somebody, God. Yeah, we were the Crimson Tide, people are like, oh, that's like a slang for like a period, right? Like that's a menstrual cycle thing. I'm like, that really ruins my entire high school experience. I've had people, many people from all over Pennsylvania who have told me, they've said menstrual cycle, and I say, I'm very sensitive to menses, believe me, and I apologize. Anyway, there I am, going up against the Skugelhaven Hurricanes,
yeah,
as they were, yeah. And this curly, yeah. This blonde, curly-haired piece of garbage was was absolutely ruthless to our center backs, almost tore a kid's ACL. So I just flat tired him when he was going in on goal, right? Like he was offside, and like the 350-pound assistant referee over on the sideline waved his flag from 40 yards away, and I flat tired the kid. He turned around and he starts choking me. Now, of course, I had gone through many years of Goju-Ryu self defense, and so I yelled to the ref while this kid had his hand around my throat, and the ref just looked. He was stunned. Did nothing about it. My coach took me out because he was fearful I was going to get a red card as retribution. So I'll tell you what, I was taken back to that moment.
Yeah.
That's what I get for watching the Gold Cup.
Have I ever told the story on the podcast about the time I got a 3-game suspension from the CASA League?
I don't know. That's time to crack that one out.
So we were playing up at YSC. Who was I playing for at the time? I was still playing for Cyborgs of Doom. This was like 2014, 2015.
The Cyborg.
Yeah, I don't know why we changed our name. We were like Philly United or something for 3 years, and then we changed our name 1 year to the Cyborgs of Doom. It wasn't my decision, but I think we won the title the first year, and then I think we like couldn't score a goal the second year. But we always played these dudes from Cracovia was the name of the team. I guess the guy Eric who started the team is like Polish as all get out. Like he
is
lives
that near
in
Chechnya.
He lives in Russia. This guy's Polish. So he lives in Port Richmond shit. So his team is Cracovia, right? Like I guess Cracovia is the name of a Polish second division team or some shit. So this one like asshole who I played against like 50 times is like in the midfield. And he's just like shoving me and being an asshole during the whole thing. And I knew it was like just going the wrong way. So we both go up for a header. He comes down and like hits me with a cheap shot elbow as we're going down. So when we like come crashing to the ground, like I just grabbed him. And like we rolled around a little bit, and then I got him in like a rear naked choke, and the ref came out, like a bunch of people like pulled us off. But I felt like the biggest turd on the planet because there was a bunch of kids like waiting to play a game after us. There was a bunch of like 8 and 9 year olds that were like watching in horror as I like bulldog choked the guy. And we both got ejected. Wow. We both got red carded. He got a 4-game suspension because he started it. He elbowed me in the face as we were going down. So the ref saw that. I got 3-game suspension for fighting. So
I want people who listen to It's Always Soccer in Philadelphia to play along with me from now on. I'm going to make the Kevin Kincaid drinking game. Anytime Kevin mentions CASA, you have to finish your drink. Anytime Kevin mentions his time as a referee, take a sip.
Hey, now.
Anytime Kevin brings up the name of a town or geography, 2 sips. There was another thing.
I'm leaning on
experience,
man. Here, this is what I do. This is my brand. This is my show, too.
Not Elton brand.
And if you don't like it, you can take your Rudy Poo candy ass. Shove it sideways. What does the rock say?
Oh, come on.
Fuck.
All
right. Well, so I was.
Take insert item here. Shine it up real nice.
And give it to the 99% of Americans that don't have it.
There you go.
So, yeah, I mean, I wasn't like, whatever. I didn't think Mexico was even that great. I mean, it's like their B team anyway, but I don't know. I mean, I thought, Pulisic probably could have did a little bit more, but he's a player for the future. You know, you got a great right back in Reggie Cannon. Aaron Long was good. The back line was pretty good. Zach Steffen, you got a goalkeeper of the future. I mean, Michael Bradley and Josie, I'm pretty much done with. I don't think Jossie Zardes and Jordan Morris are necessarily national team level.
Hold on. Wait. On the last show, there was a point made about how people have been crapping on Josie and on Michael Bradley. And who was it that said that they weren't upset with those guys playing? They thought the whole thing was kind of overblown. How long are you going to hold a grudge? This came up on the last show. And I feel like, and I feel like
me?
You kind
you
of,
that was me?
I feel like you kind of support it. You weren't the one who brought it up, but you were a quasi-supporter of it.
Well, last night, that was before...
And it actually made me nauseous.
That was before I watched Josie Miss a Sitter and before I watched Michael Bradley just, like, not really be up to snuff last night. Like,
Josie
they're only
out
20...
the door looking to be Chris Wondolowski.
Here's the thing. Like, I don't think people realize Josie's 29. He's not that old. Bradley's only 31. It feels like they're a lot older than that because we've been watching them. Like, the 2010 World Cup felt like it was a million years ago. Are they the best in their current positions right now? I mean, maybe. Tyler Adams changes everything for me. But, like, looking forward to the next cycle, like, I can't justify Josie and Michael Bradley being in the next World Cup at age 35 and or age, I'm sorry, 2022, you know, at age 34 and whatever the fuck, right? Honestly, I would just kind of say thanks for your service. You've been a great, you know, what do they say in England? You've been a great servant to the club. It's time to move on. And let's, like, I'm honestly more interested in, like, some of the U20s and some of the, like, 21, 22-year-olds, you know? Mix them in with Weston McKennie, Paxton Pomykal, throw him in there, see what he's got. Reggie Cannon, Tyler Adams, Tyler Boyd. Like, I didn't watch that last night. I didn't feel discouraged, I guess is what I would say. You know, other games, like under the Dave Sarokin, you know, regime, the 1 year of that, I just felt utterly fucking apathetic and bored and uninterested in the men's national team, you know, in general. It got so bad that they were just a whipping boy for the woke people who just wanted to, like, you know, prop up the women's team and say that the men's team was dog shit. The men's team didn't have anything to stand on because, you know what? They were dog shit. So,
yep.
All right. You want to take questions and comments and concerns?
I love questions, comments, and concerns.
Okay. This is from Matt Thornton, a mediocre bad guy. Credit to Matt Thornton for coming up with the name of this podcast. It's always soccer in Philadelphia. He says, Rose Lavelle is my golden ball for the Women's World Cup. I liked Fabian's freedom to roam to get onto the ball. It reminded me a bit of Christian Maidana, who is now on his 13th club in 13 pro years. Was it good for the 2019 system or bad? We talked about that, the Fabian's roaming. I don't know. I think it's different with Montero in there, you know, who can plug that gap and go forward. Eric Grote says the Gold Cup final wasn't being broadcast in the Lima, Peru airport. Can you fix this for next time? Thanks. Well, I think Russ can fix it because he speaks Spanish.
Es verdad.
He speaks Espanol.
Sí. Espanol. Qué bueno, no?
Richard Saunders says, do you have any leads on Jim Curtin's burner account? No, I don't, but we've known that he's had it for a long time. And you know actually what tipped us off? Well, what tipped off the public to it, which would have clued people in the first time, was when he and I got in the CJ Sapong argument in the press conference. Right? Because he was referencing shit that I said on Twitter. Like, how would he know what I said on Twitter if he wasn't reading it on his burner, you know, unless like the PR staff like prepped him on all my tweets, which they would, which they don't, which they wouldn't, you know. Did the Union look uninterested and uninspired after they went up 1-0 on Sunday? It looked like they thought they had the game in the bag. It's a game you should win at home, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I would say so. But again, I think that's part of what set this team apart from most of the iterations before it, is that even if they are going to like let off the gas a little bit, they usually get up by more than one. It was just kind of uncharacteristic. I think that they probably thought that by going up when they did and knowing that the game had been delayed a day, they probably were just kind of resting on their laurels that Orlando was just going to kind of pack it in.
Yeah, because they were sitting there playing five at the back and the Union scored early, and they're probably like, all right, well, we've got this, you know?
Yep. And to Orlando's credit, they, you know, they played well. And then, you know what, in some sense, for as disappointing as the Union's result was to that point, at least they fought back and ended up with a point out of it, because that would have been an absolute disaster to end up with nothing.
Connor says, Michael Bradley looked like he moved slower than me after a couple of IPAs.
Why would you drink an IPA?
Yeah, I just don't know why you would drink an IPA. Unless the Larimer is giving it to me, then I'm drinking it. I actually tried one of their IPAs when I met up with Matt and the dudes. It was good. It was like a session IPA. It was good. It was like lower alcohol, you know.
Look at you.
Ian Smith says, is it fair to compare women's and men's sports in any capacity?
Yeah, I think so.
I think sure, yeah.
like, this is the, so my wife is really good about this stuff in that, like, I've met people who have tried to say that, like, the WNBA and the NBA are effectively the same product. Mm-hmm. And that the highest quality of women's basketball is comparable to the highest quality of men's, which it's not. But, like, soccer is the one that she's, like, very dead set on. And, like, you can say that, like, the overall speed of the game, all right, that doesn't match up perfectly. And, like, the technical skill and some of, like, the explosive plays, like the Ronaldo back post header where he jumps up, you know, 17 feet in the air. Like, okay, you don't see that in the women's game. But I would argue that the women's game fundamentally, in a lot of ways, is in some ways, like, at the same level. And in some ways, I feel like the women's game, at least at the international level, it feels like they play a more fundamentally sound system than certain men's national teams, where it feels like there's an over-reliance on a star player to get everything going. Hint, Messi.
I have two thoughts on that. Number one, I would kind of agree with your wife in that, you know, it's the difference between the men's game and the women's game is blurred more than other sports. You know, one of the things that we always say about soccer on the men's side is that, you know, the thing that makes it beautiful is that you don't need to be 6'3" and 225 pounds, you know, because a guy like Sebastian Giovinco or Lionel Messi can be 5'7", 145, and still be amazing at the game, you know? And that's why soccer is so celebrated, because you don't necessarily need the athletic profile that you need to be a American football player or a baseball. Well, baseball's not a good example, because you can be a fat fuck and be good at baseball. But basketball, you know? So if that is applicable to the men's game, certainly it's applicable to the women's game. Like, Rose Lavelle can be she can be 5'8" and 130 pounds or whatever the hell, right? And she can still be great, because she can be low to the ground, she can have, you know, good vision and distribution. There's a lot of stuff that just not require a necessarily robust athletic profile, you know what I mean? So a lot of the same things that we celebrate in the diversity of the men's game, you know, smaller guys, taller guys, you know, faster guys, slower guys, that can all kind of be applied to the women's game. I played a ton of co-ed soccer back in the day. I always liked playing co-ed because I felt like the women that we played with, and like all of them were ex-college players, they did play like a more fundamental game. They knew how to space the field. They knew where they wanted to pass the ball. They just kind of understood what we were trying to do. Whereas a lot of like the guys that I was playing with, we'd just be like throwing ourselves into tackles and like trying to be like ultra aggressive and shit like that, to the point where it was like counterproductive. But the women on our team, we could always count on them to like kind of be steady and hold the shape and, you know, back us up when we would go flying into a tackle and take ourselves 15 yards out of the play, you know? So I think some of the drawbacks you see in women's soccer, I don't think the goalkeeping is necessarily at a level of the men's game. You know, and I don't think, obviously, you know, like top ends, you know, you're not going to get the same like top end speed and, you know, there's sort of high impact kind of, aerial plays that you would see in the men's game. But I mean, for the reasons I listed, I think that's why the women's game is could certainly be comparable to the men's game, you know?
Yep.
Mike Yarum says, Fontana, Anthony Fontana seems to play well in his appearances this year. While there's a bit of a logjam in the midfield, I think the Union needs to see what he has to offer long-term. Thoughts? Is Anthony Fontana any better or any worse than Brendan Aaronson? Like, why is Brendan Aaronson getting this huge push, but we don't see anything of Fontana?
I think that's the real question. Like, I would be interested to see what Fontana does, because I think we've kind of gone open and close in the times that I've been on this show, that we've talked about the fact that, like, Aaronson's just not ready.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't see...
And Fontana's older than
I don't him. See... I don't see... Yeah, and I don't see Aaronson finding the ability this season to break through, and I understand wanting to play a kid and get him, you know, important reps and reps in games that matter. And there's something to be said for that. But I think the speed of the game is too much for him right now. And I think he's just like he's like slower at processing what's going on the pitch than maybe Fontana would be. Mm. I would have no problem seeing Fontana get a little bit more of an extended run and let Aaronson go down to Steele and get his bearings and you know, maybe he ends up being somebody that's brought in as part of a rotation, and he comes in feeling a little bit more confident, because I couldn't blame him if at this point he's feeling a little bit of a hit to, not to the ego, but like to his confidence going into games. Mm-hmm. Just knowing that he hasn't been able to really make a major impact consistently.
Dr. Strange Dupe says, how worried should U.S. fans be about last night's loss on a scale of 1 to 10?
I think...
I'd say like a 2 or a 3. I wouldn't be that worried about it.
I'm the opposite side of the spectrum.
Mm.
I'm deeply concerned about the next World Cup cycle. And I know that it's still quite a bit off, but Berhalter right now has done little to nothing to make me think that he is an innovative...
I wasn't a fan of the subs.
That he's an innovative manager at the forefront of what soccer is developing into and what it will be a few years from now. I find the lack of development to a point where you have to rely on Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore to come out, and it feels like playing the greatest hits. I'm worried that this program hasn't been able to find suitable replacements for those guys to an extent where you don't feel this need to rely on them in what they would consider a big match in the Gold Cup final. Those are two things. The Berhalter thing to me was one of the most fraudulent searches for an executive on a team since the Philadelphia 76ers brought in Brian Colangelo. It just felt nasty. It felt dirty. And by the way, the long-held belief that the U.S. Soccer Federation didn't give Tata Martino any thought because he had a language barrier issue. If that part is ever true, if anybody ever comes out, like this will be like an ESPN 30 for 30 thing many years from now, but if like that ever comes out from somebody who was in the know or who was on that the executive committee that was looking for a new manager, like if that's a real thing, then a lot of people should have lost their jobs, because you lost a tactically brilliant to an extent manager who was managing in your domestic league, and you let him go because Berhalter spoke English. Like, put those two guys next to each other, give them the same lineup, and tell me how many times Berhalter is going to lead that team to a better result than Tata Martino would have. You know, that's the part that's disappointing to me.
Speaking of Brian Colangelo, Glenn Macnow asked on Twitter, who are the best Philly sports power couples? And obviously, like, Julie Ertz and Zach Ertz is like number one of all time in eternity, right? I had AJ Feely and Heather Mitz as a number two now. And number three, I think I'd have to go for Philly sports power couples. I think I'd have to go Brian Colangelo and Barbara Bottini.
Ugh, Barbara. You wonderful lady, you.
Mike says, will Andrew Vooten be the only biggest summer move for the Union? Or do you think they could add another starting caliber player? No, I think that's it. I think they're done. I don't think there's anything more coming. Brisket Bear says, did Rapinoe making the World Cup about Rapinoe bother you? Because it bothered me. No, it didn't bother me because she backed it up. I mean, I don't think she, like I said, I don't think she played very well from the run of play. Like, she stayed too fucking wide all the time. And I need Alex Morgan to learn how to make a diagonal run. But no, I didn't, nothing Rapinoe did bothered me because, like, she backed up everything she said. She didn't really say all that much either. Like, she was asked questions and she answered them, but it was like she wasn't doing any kind of elaborate protest. I don't think she was even really that annoying. I think, like, people put microphones to her and asked her shit and she answered it, but it wasn't like she came out with all guns played. Like, she didn't pull up her shirt and said fuck Trump on it or whatever, you know, but I don't know. Christian says, what should we think about the Aurelien Collin over Mark McKenzie start? I don't know. McKenzie played with Bethlehem Steel on Thursday and he went like 90 minutes. I don't know. Aurelien Collin's a pro. Collin makes me laugh, man. I love watching him play because he's just like, he's all over the place. You can rest assured that he'll like be down on the ground rolling around at least three times. He's going to put his body on the line. He's going to clean somebody out with a huge tackle. Like, the guy's just like a train wreck to watch in a good way. What do we make about it? I don't know. I have no idea what's up with Mark McKenzie.
How did you feel about Real, by the way?
Matt Real, man, that was an interesting sub. Nice.
I liked him. I liked his crossing ability from the left flank. Like, I was actually somewhat impressed.
I think they just
with his,
went,
like, his impact like, on the game at the end. I thought it was
one
good.
One of the storylines that normally would be bigger if they weren't that good this year would be like, why aren't we seeing any of Matt Real and Anthony Fontana? Like, where have we gone with the rest of these home, like the lost couple of homegrowns? You know, like, yep. Why is Brandon Aaronson the next coming of Jesus? And, you know, these other guys are like chop meat, you know? Yep. Connor says, do you think having Jamiro on the field changes that tie to a win? And what is your podcast setup, mic recording and editing software? Jamiro on the field, yeah, I think it changes it to a win. So when I record with Russ, we're using a program called TriCast, where we record on the internet. So I'm sitting at my computer with a microphone. He's sitting at his computer with a microphone. It records online, and then Russ mixes it down into an MP3, and he just sends it to me.
I use GarageBand for that. It's really
Russ
great.
Russ uses GarageBand. I use a Sonar X1, which I used for recording music, the two albums that I did back in the day. And I have a when Dave and I did the fundraiser back in the day, I got a PreSonus Studio 68, so I have like four mic inputs on it, and it's like a USB that does I just plug a Shure SM58. I have like half music equipment and half for like recording equipment. Like Shure SMs are like what bands use like on stage all the time, so I use those mics. But that's the setup.
Let me recommend mic wise to people if you're thinking about doing podcasts. Yeti, well, I guess it's Blue. Blue is the name of the line. There's like the Blue Yeti, and then there's the Blue Snowball. And depending on how many people you think are going to listen to your show, the Blue Snowball is a terrible microphone. I got it once just because it was on sale, but the recording quality of it was pretty bad. Now, it's good if you're going for like a full room effect, then it's somewhat decent. But if you shell out a little bit more for the Blue Yeti, it is a much better overall microphone. And it's a USB.
Joe House has two good questions. One of them I don't think I'm prepared to answer. He says, women's team with a lot of over 30s on the squad, project the 2023 three-peat champions. I can't give you a full starting 11, but Rapinoe is going to be gone, yeah, because she's going to be too old. Alex Morgan will be 34. Lavelle will be a star. How old's Crystal Dunn? She'll still be playing. Sauerbrunn, I think, will be gone, right? She's too old.
If it were the men's team, they'd bring back Abby Wambach.
I guess the next generation of stars are Rose Lavelle. I mean, how old is Lindsay Horan? I guess she didn't even play in the final. Did she come in as a sub? I can't even remember. Remember all the shit people are saying, like, does Jill Ellis even know how to coach? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, she could have thrown anybody on the field. They probably would have won.
Lindsay Wren's she's 25, so she'll so be 29 her aunt, so. For the next cup. She'll be there,
and
yeah.
Mewis still in her 20s? I think she is. Maybe Mallory Pugh, Morgan Bryan might be in there. Girlfriend of former Philadelphia Union player Eric Bird, by the way.
How about Kim Hunter? Will she be on the squad?
I don't even know who that is. Who does she play for?
Kim Hunter is if you play on FIFA 19. Kim Hunter is one of the story mode players, along with Alex Hunter and Danny Williams.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, there you go. Shows how much FIFA I've been playing, which is none, because I actually play real soccer in the Casa League. Drink. Glug, glug, glug.
Glug, glug.
Joe also says, how does the young up-and-coming... how do you beat the Mexico high press? Yeah, I mean, they played some direct shit early, you know, and Josie was just able to, like bulldog some guys, and they got behind Mexico. I mean, yeah, you can play direct. We can play direct. There's nothing wrong with playing direct and winning on set pieces. We beat Mexico like that a couple times, so I don't have any problem with that. Bro Rad says Fontana should steal some Aaronson time. Mitch Dandenak says, do you think Montero could be a long-term option at the number 10 spot? I do, but I like him as a shuttler better. That's a problem. He's the best at two different spots on the field. Yep. Joe says, any Union player on the current roster were to play overseas, who is the most likely candidate?
To play overseas?
Jamiro Montero. I think he's probably going back there inevitably anyway.
Probably.
Sean says, Sean Croce, no relation to Pat, not that I know of, is there any chance the Union try to upgrade it right back? And is Kleberson's quoted recruitment of Danny Alves more on the funny side or the sad side of the spectrum? I think it's more on the funny side, because I think the Balotelli thing ended up being sad, how that got blown out of proportion. And we had to do it an emergency, like a non-emergency Balotelli podcast with Phil.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Ryan says, who does Vooten replace up top? Yeah, I think he replaces Fafa. And that's it.
Fafer.
Russ, I'm gonna give you the last word on the Boys Soccer podcast.
Not that much.
Oh, excuse me.
I'll be honest. I'm running on empty.
No.
I am. I'm running on empty. But don't worry. But don't worry. Oh no. I'm running on empty. And you know what, Kevin? Actually, the other day my propane tank was running on empty. And you know what I did? Do you know what I did? I called the fine folks. I went onto their site, cinch.com. Check the episode description. And cinch.com is a propane delivery service brought to you by AmeriGas. They will they'll deliver you a brand new full propane tank for just $10 with the promo code CrossingBroad, capital C, capital B, one word, CrossingBroad. You go over to their site, punch in your address, and put your old tank out on your porch or your driveway or your stoop. Stoop kids afraid to leave the stoop, leave it outside, and they will exchange it with a brand new full propane tank for just $10. Again, that's cinch.com, cynch.com. That's my final.
Well, there you have it. I'd like to thank you, Russ, for coming on the program again. I'm sure we'll get big ratings as we always do when you come on.
Huge.
We'd like to thank Grant Wall for his inspiration as well. We'd like to thank John Boric. For his column as well. And of course, we'd like to thank you, the listener, which is why we do the Always Soccer in Philadelphia program. Episode number 84. Again, the Larimer live podcast is on. We're good. July 20th. What I would suggest is the brewery is so close to the stadium that if you're going down to the game, just park where you would normally park and just walk over. It's literally like it takes you 2 seconds to walk. It's literally right behind the train tracks on the other side of the practice fields. There's no like cost to get in. There's no cover charge. There's no rules, not that I know of yet. So just walk on in. I will have a table there with my PA system, and we'll be sitting there and we'll just talk. We'll just talk soccer. We're not gonna like do any crazy surprises or anything like that. We're not gonna have like nobody's gonna like. It's not gonna be like Latu jumping out of like a birthday cake or something. It's just gonna be like a solid, good Philadelphia Union talk, which is why you listen to this program in the first place, right? All right, I'm Kevin. He's Russ. Russ, thanks, man. We will do it again sometime. Until then, enjoy your first place Philadelphia Union.